Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, UnitedHealthcare insurance plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about UnitedHealthcare insurance plans at uh1.com.
Oh, hello, friends.
We wanted to bring up something special today that we're excited about. We're excited for 2021. Why is it, Greg?
We're hashtag sponsored.
Our podcast is finally sponsored.
Which is rare for us. It's 2.5 years in and we honestly have never had a sponsor until now.
Like recently. And before we even bring up any sponsors, we honestly just wanted to say, like, thank you all for supporting the show so much that we have all your supporting. It has made it possible. And when it comes to sponsors, like, we're still testing this out. And it honestly helps if you just check them out, you click their links, you whether there's free trials or whatever. Just wanted to throw it out there that it is means a lot to us, and that does like help our show continue.
Yeah, it is the way that you can help us keep making these. And the first sponsor we want to talk about is Dashlane, which is something that I've become obsessed with because I do constantly lose my wallet, which
truly loses, forgets everything.
And also now that cash like doesn't really exist in the pandemic, I have no reason to have my wallet on me. And so I honestly never know where it is. And so I can't really ever put my credit card information into my computer. I also have different logins for everything, which I am a mess. So Dashlane, what it does is conglomerates all this information for you. So if you go to dashlane.com/ASAP science, just clicking that link, checking them out. You can get a free premium membership for a device there if you want. But just even going to that link and checking them out and deciding if it's something that you want will really help our show. So now let's get into it.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are ASAP Science here to make things make sense.
Today, we are going through everything you could ever want to know about houseplants with our friend Nick Pileggi, who is a houseplant expert. We're going to talk about the impact of touching plants and whether or not you should be doing it, as well as the environmental impact of the houseplant industry. It's going to be really interesting, truly mind-blowing in some ways. Let's get into it.
Mind-blowing in some way.
Well, I mean, we already recorded the Hangout interview, and it was, there are lots of things you learned that you didn't know, and I'm just saying mind-blowing for you, maybe.
It did blow my mind. In fact, I have to, we're not going to spoil the lead here, but I got to change a lot of the ways that I've potted my current plants. That's all I'm saying.
Mind-blowing, because it truly was like a moment where we were like, everything we've done is wrong.
I know. And like those ones that I killed were for a reason. I'm so sad.
But we'll get to that in a minute. I wanted to bring up the Mars landing. Mars rover just happened, and I feel like we didn't really talk about it just because we've been like, I don't know, distracted. And I'm like, what do you think about it?
What do you mean we didn't talk about it? We watched it, and then you were like having an existential crisis.
Oh, but sometimes I realize in those moments that like other science communicators are so tapped into that.
Oh, you mean like didn't talk about it openly online?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit together, but I meant I realized like maybe I'm not that into space science, even though I am. Like, there's so many elements of it that I am. But maybe it's just because in general, I'm more fascinated by biology.
Yeah. So there sort of was a bit of that conversation online. Like, I would see some people being like, oh, I'm so not into this, but glad to know other people are.
And yeah, like, I have nothing against it. It's not like I think it's bad or something.
But there is also that other aspect of like it happened right as there was a national emergency in Texas where people don't have any water. And then to see just like the dichotomy of like, landing a rover on Mars is a bit of a talking point for, you know, what is the purpose? And I know like people like Emily Calandrelli have like come out and explained why.
Right. The importance of like funding into this kind of thing. And I do believe it. Like I hear both sides and I understand that it's a false dichotomy. We can care about more than one thing at a time. And
yeah.
The like what's happening throughout the states in Texas is not because they invested in space exploration. If anything, it's because of the freaking politicians who have neglected the power systems for a long time.
Yeah, so there's a, like a power grid that like managed to not have federal people regulate it under to make sure it would work under those conditions. Like, that's wild.
But I did have an existential crisis because I was just like, when I think about a robot landing on Mars so far away, it just puts that perspective of, wait, we're all just like running around on this earth, like stressing about an email. And there's just like this thing studying Mars. Like, what is life?
Yeah. And I also think it's so weird that the photos were like, this looks like snow in Toronto. Like, it looked so similar in so many ways, I think, to parts of Earth that it makes you realize like, oh, we're just on one of those. Like, it does it does put into perspective. And I think that can be a really like intriguing aspect of why space is so interesting to so many people.
And very inspiring in some ways.
And very inspiring because, I mean, it's fascinating to think like we as humans are smart enough to use the technology to do that. One thing I will say is that I just realized I'm like nervous about what I'm going to say, and I just kept like postponing it with like one thing I'll say. It bothers me when science communicators, this is all they'll talk about with like so much
energy,
and then they will completely ignore something like the climate crisis, the Green New Deal, racial inequalities in their own country. Like, that's the only reason that sometimes I'm just like that bit of that argument that comes out where it's like, okay, well,
you're able to be present when you want to be present.
Yeah, like you're able to talk about what you think is a really important thing, and it just so happens that you think this rover landing on Mars. What I'm getting from your active like social media presence is that you do care about this more, which
and
I just think is a bit
that
of an issue.
You do use your platform when you want to, because sometimes I think people get away with it by being like, I'm not really that on social media, but it's like there are some people in my mind that are able to easily be on social media when it's something exciting to them. And you're right, it's not I don't know. Yeah. And to be fair, there are a handful of science communicators who talk about all those things, like do care about climate crisis, do talk about racial inequality, but there are also a lot that, yeah, are completely silent when it matters in those things.
And I'm just saying that I think is where the conversation comes around of like the comparing, which I don't think is fair. Like, we're suffering on Earth, yet this thing is on Mars. Like it's like they're actually completely not linked at all. But the only way I was able to like link them and kind of be a little bit like, was when it's like, you don't talk about one, but you only talk about the other. That was the only thing, but I actually think it's amazing. I really love to zoom out and think about Mars. Like, I love the idea of knowing that an email is pointless. Like, I that can be very relaxing to me. And I think it's fascinating and so obviously impressive that like we were able to do that. And I'm excited for what the information brings, but I do also think like we are in a climate crisis and it's not going to help that, and it's going to not be valuable information if we can't figure out how to, you know, get a Green New Deal. Okay, let's move on.
Fair enough. The baguettes, hurry up.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
Oh my gosh, I like, we're like, just fair enough, the baguettes, hurry up. Like, that's so funny. That's something that I have started saying that didn't make sense, and I'm so glad that you say it.
I feel like you've said it for a long time now. For everyone who's like, what the hell does that mean? Isn't it like a reference to Beauty and the Beast?
But like, in Beauty and the Beast, they go, Maurice, the baguettes, hurry up. And for some reason, at one point, I was like, fair enough. Sounds like Maurice, the baguettes, hurry up. And I've said it in public, and people are like, oh, cool. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Like, it to me feels like it's a massive cultural reference. Yeah, and then we say it and everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking
about? You've been stuck in this home with me and we haven't left, and then now you're saying that and I'm like hearing it and I'm like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and I had the moment where I was like, oh yeah, people will get this, and you're like, no, Mitch, that's just the weird thing I say every now and then.
This week I learned about seaweed, which is a plant, not a house plant. I mean, depending on what house.
That'd be cool if you could have a little tank and just grow seaweed.
A shrimp house, maybe. What do you mean? It's literally a fish tank.
But can you? Yeah. Do people have seaweed in their fish?
Yeah, yeah. I think some
cool.
People do.
So then it can be a house plant.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So seaweed extracts create these things called hydrocolloids, which you actually were using recently when you made that plastic video about like making your own plastic. So that was a seaweed aggregate.
So it was alginate was like the powder we were using that is often taken from seaweed.
Yeah, so that like viscous, I was about to say taste because we kept eating it, but I'm like, isn't that a taste? It's a feeling. But
texture.
Like, yeah, texture. Comes from large molecules that dissolve in water and they make, they're called hydrocolloids, and they make that sort of feeling. And what I didn't realize was that those seaweed extracts are really commonly used as thickening agents in so many of the things that we eat that we think are being thickened through dairy. So like ice cream is
really?
because dairy and these milk and egg products will go bad really easily. They spoil really easily. So a lot of the time when you're getting that creamy flavor, like even Caesar salad dressing, those types of things, it's actually coming from seaweed.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And then I was like, really like, wait, this is so weird looking into it. And it's also what thickens our toothpaste.
Oh, what?
Yeah, because like, I was like, toothpaste?
I'm like, what would toothpaste look like without it? Just more watery?
Well, yeah, and it's like, obviously it's not like cream or like egg-based, like in our toothpaste. Cause it's
like mayonnaise in our toothpaste.
Yeah, but it comes out as like a mayo vibe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the way it looks,
it's
that is like
very thick.
Yeah, so that's coming from seaweed. Also frosting, jam, and cream fillings. Like, a cream filling in a donut will go bad quite easily if it's coming from these sort of dairy places. So there's also seaweed in that. Anyways, I just thought that was really cool because it kind of messes with your brain a little bit.
Right.
And seaweed is actually way more environmentally friendly compared to dairy.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that these industries are not in any way doing this for environmental reasons. It's purely so it doesn't spoil. But I just thought that was
really cool. Yeah, when we had done that episode on, you know, making the edible plastic, and I was looking into it. It was like it. Though I had known at that point that it gets used in a lot of culinary stuff because the bag I ordered of it was like, this is food grade. It's used in kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
And I, at the time, I had read a handful of examples of like puddings and fillings.
Yeah.
And all those kinds of things that it gets used in. But it never really occurred to me that they were things that I would just like casually.
Yeah. You don't even realize you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. That's really cool.
What'd you learn?
So this week, a new study came out that studied the long-term impacts of drinking energy drinks.
Okay.
And I don't drink energy drinks very often because in university I tried, because I would drink tea or coffee to get a kick off that.
Jacked up.
But I feel like when I had an energy drink, I honestly felt insane. Have you had them before?
But did you think it was placebo, also known as placebo?
No, I think actually it might have been so much caffeine that, so what happened is I got energy, but I couldn't focus. And I think this has happened to me before when I've had too much coffee. Like, you're awake, but your brain is so jittery that to study on that, I was like, it is way too much for me to handle. I'm also, like, really sensitive to caffeine. Anyway, this study has been part of a really long longitudinal study. It's one of the only longitudinal studies on this, but they were following 900 people from birth. So they're not just studying energy drinks, but this was one of, like, the subsequent things they looked into. So between ages of 20 and 22, they would like, you know, interview these people, ask them about their energy drink consumption, their moods, all these things. And basically after controlling for all life factors as well as they could, they found that energy drink consumption is correlated with increased stress and in young adult males, depression and anxiety.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that intense? Their hypothesis was that it maybe alters sleeping behaviors or sleeping patterns.
Huh.
Interesting that that hasn't been like associated with caffeine or coffee. I do think there's a lot more research in coffee, and it is interesting because sometimes it's like, it's so good for you and actually people have less depression, and then others are kind of the opposite. Coffee kind of finds that, but that, you know, this is just one study in a mix of hopefully many more that will come, but energy drinks obviously have more than just caffeine in them. And I thought,
yeah, they're a really easy thing to go in on and absolutely drag. You know what I mean?
Like what is the... is so much sugar, typically, like most of them.
I can't believe I used to do Jaeger bombs, which is just like Jägermeister mixed with Red Bull. And I love that it's like dangerous, and we've done videos on it before, and it's like about your heart and all those things. But even just the concept of that is so wild to me because, yeah, now
and
I'm
there were
so
warnings.
Sensitive.
It was like, I think energy.
Oh, I thought you said they're rewarding. And I'm like, rewarding. After we would dance to Lady Gaga on the freaking dance floor, like you've never
that
ever seen.
Dopamine kick. no, there were warnings on energy drinks, at least at that time when we were a youth. That said, do not mix with alcohol. And yet you could, that was like a really popular drink.
There were, there were plastic cups made for it that were designed like a donut boop. So that you would like, instead of even having to drop it in the glass, like at a university
they
would, like,
tip them or something, right?
No, that there was the way that you put the shot glass in and tip them for sure. But at some of the bars in university, it was like a donut shaped glass. So the middle would be the Jaeger and they'd pour the Red Bull around. So as you drink, it was like designed so they didn't even have to worry about the thing. I'm like, wait, this is made to poison us. Cool.
That's wild. It's like, what, who made those?
And obviously, like, that's bad for me that the only time I ever, I honestly think the only time I've really ever drank an energy drink was when I was drinking at a bar at and like having it with alcohol. Yeah. And being like, I want to keep
and
partying.
Going to like class the next morning.
My like nerd friends when I was like trying to be straight in high school and just like going from group to group being like, who's gonna be the least mean to me? But I went to like the nerd group and was kind of like, I never had a video game system and I was not part of that culture, but they all drank this thing called Balls energy drink.
What?
B-A-W-L-Z, I
think.
Wait,
are those the little ones?
It's blue and it has this almost like ribbing on the side as if it's like a ribbed condom or like a dildo.
Oh my God.
And it was really funny. Like they all felt like it was making their gameplay better or whatever. And I think I remember drinking some of those and being like, oh yeah, I can kick flip on Tony Hawk, go two or whatever.
Oh my God. To have an energy drink and then just like fully sit still.
That's I know. That's what they were doing was just like pull all nighters.
I guess the weird thing is that energy drinks and even coffee are primarily used to sit, to stay alert.
Yeah.
Longer, right? Like
it's not
to do more work, and run. To study all night. But you would assume like to, you need the energy to like physically do something. But it is interesting that I would say the majority case people are like,
yeah, it's like I was doing a kickflip, but by pressing Y on my Nintendo controller. Yeah. Don't even ask me to do a kickflip in real life, although I do wear skate brands. Okay.
I thought that was study was interesting. The only caveat, obviously, is there's still figuring out, you know, correlation, causation, but it was the first longitudinal or one of the only longitudinal studies looking at this. So more to be found.
Let's get into houseplants, baby.
Yeah, well, let's take a little break first, and then we're going to be talking everything you need to know about houseplants. So as many of you know, recently I've been trying to get more physically active and healthy. I've always had different issues. There's always something going on. But more recently I've had to focus on like protein consumption and my diet and my physical activity. And that's become a lot easier with today's sponsor, Magic Spoon. So Magic Spoon is a cereal that's zero sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. It's only 140 calories per serving, and it's keto friendly, gluten friendly, grain free, soy free, low carb, and GMO free. They come with a bunch of different flavors. There's a variety pack that has 4 flavors of cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. They're honestly so yummy, and it's nice to know that I'm actually eating cereal that is high in protein, and it's going to be something that I've been trying to focus on. So it's been really helpful for me. It's super yummy. If you are interested in checking it out, you can go to magicspoon.com/sidenote to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code sidenote at checkout to save $5 on your order. Also, Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/sidenote and use the code sidenote to save $5. Thanks again to Magic Spoon for sponsoring this episode.
Study time.
Nick Pileggi, we're so glad to have you here to teach us everything we could possibly ever want to know about houseplants and plant care. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Of course. Thank you guys so much for having me.
I think I discovered your YouTube channel. I know you have like an Instagram where you share lots of your plants and pictures and stuff as well, but I feel like it's been pandemic vibes for me because I, since the pandemic, have been more interested, obviously, in plants. I feel like a lot of people have. Have you found that interest or viewership has generally been up since the pandemic?
100%. I will not lie. It was actually kind of funny. When like the pandemic hit, I feel like my like worst months were like March and April, like in like the whole time I was doing YouTube, and then suddenly like May hit, and I think that's like when the boom hit. So that was like my best month.
The when everyone was like, okay, I can't last any longer. I need some plants and I need some advice on plants.
Yeah, it was like 2 months in, everyone just got like hit with that, and it was just
a little spring energy.
Exactly.
They need to look after their children that don't need that much work.
Exactly.
Before, okay, wait. Before we berate you with like too many questions about plants, which they're coming. Can you give us a little summary of like what you do on YouTube? What's your background in plants? Like, and yeah, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, so on YouTube, I literally just kind of sit and ramble about plants. That's literally the only thing I do on my channel. I try to, you know, I'm not educated in the sense of like a college education. I have all of my learning from experience, which I think is very important when it comes to houseplants in specific. As a botanist, you would have to, of course, have the education, but just as a simple houseplant grower, really the best thing is experience. So no, I don't have any education, like I said, but I worked for a long time. Well, a long time for a 26-year-old. So I worked there for 2.5 years, but it was...
You're 26, you're a baby!
I worked as a plant buyer at a local houseplant shop, and I learned a lot there. I made some incredible relationships that I'm sure I will still hold in the future as I start my own journey in that part of my life. But I do want to open my own store one day, but you know, the pandemic's going on, so...
Did you always know that you were into plants, like, before you worked there?
No. Well, you know, yes and no. So I grew up gardening, outdoor gardening with my father, and we never had houseplants. I remember when we would go, like, buy the outdoor gardening stuff, I would see houseplants, and I'd be like, I want that. Can we grow that? And they'd be like, no, the cats are going to pee in it. So we just never had houseplants, ever. And I actually didn't even get into houseplants until after I, like, brought back outdoor gardening into my life indoors, so I started doing an herb garden in my home in college, and my neighbor, who actually ended up being a future roommate, another story for another day, but she came to my apartment for the first time, and the first thing she said was, why don't you have any houseplants? And I was like, I don't know. So I went, and then it was a slippery slope from there. Ended up starting this YouTube channel kind of as a way to get my foot in the door, since I didn't have any education. So I was at like a dead-end job, let's say, at a bar, and I was very much looking to get out of it. So that was my stepping stone into working at the houseplant shop. And then from there, I was able to, you know, really hone in on what I wanted to do. And then that's why now I'm doing full-time at home. So I absolutely love it.
How many plants do you have in your home?
I haven't counted in a little bit. It's more than 450.
What?
I hope.
Wait,
not
are
500.
You serious?
Yes, I would be like upset if it was at 500. I feel like that's a little too much. But
I love that justification for yourself. Like 400, oh, 450. Totally thank goodness. Not. 100. Now that'd be wild. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Okay. And over the course of how long have you collected those plants, and how many have died along the way?
So I started when I was 20. Back when I was in college, and like I said, I'm 26 now. So it's been about 6 years. And a lot, I'd say more than I have currently have died, but like I said, that's where you learn the most. I think a lot of people like kick themselves so hard about killing their plants, but I'm like, no, that's how you learn. But that might also be because plants, like a lot of plants, collector plants cost a lot of money. So people might be like killing their like $250 philodendron, and that's something to kick yourself over.
Whoa.
But you know, if you start off with just like a little $4 pothos. Right.
Okay, wait. $250. I have never spent that on a houseplant.
I haven't either.
Which one is that? Like, what is that? Why is it so much?
Well, there's a bunch of houseplants that have currently just like skyrocketed. And this is something that really has only happened since like March, April, May of last year, as we were talking about with the whole houseplant boom. So there are a couple, the most notable ones that like are like most well known for being expensive would be the pink princess philodendron, which is like a pink variegated plant, which is kind of silly in my opinion, because there's plenty of other pink plants out there. But this is one plant people are like, I'm going to spend top dollar. I thought I sold it inexpensive when I worked at the houseplant store for $125. But
oh my gosh, and how big is it?
A little tiny 4-inch like plants, like I don't have like a good example around me here, but like three little leaves.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I did not know that, because I don't like when I shop for houseplants, I'm not versed enough to know, like I'm more talking about like environment or whatever. Like I'm not but like there is actually like one day I might be like, what about that one? And there'll be like 125 smackaroonies. Like
what's this little baby?
That's so weird. So there's trends. There is trends that,
and that's something people hate, but it's just like, it's something that exists. Trends exist in everything, so it's just something. But I do want to mention too, there is another house plant that it's a variegated monstera. I don't know if you guys are familiar with like the classic Swiss cheese plant or monstera.
They kind of have like the holes in them.
Yes.
The variegated version of that sells for like over $1,000, and if you get like a different sport, which is just like a different version of the plant, like maybe it's got yellow variegation, or I found one when I was working at the house plant store with green variegation, and those kinds of plants would sell for like over $2,000, $3,000, maybe even $4,000.
Okay,
wild.
We need like a best in show type movie about people like trying to figure out how to like find, or like maybe there's like some sort of like, you know, financial like drug lord energy to these plants. That's so interesting. That's so expensive.
So I don't get it either. Like I am in deep, as you know. I like am surrounded by plants. This is what I do. But I've never spent more than $100 on a plant before.
Yeah, I don't think I could because of that fear of killing it. Mm-hmm. Like, just, like, not even fear, but just, like, you know, like, that's such a, like, the stakes are so high. Maybe if it was huge, a huge plant.
Because even you've said yourself, like, as a plant, someone who knows a lot about them, like, it's not inevitable that, like, you will still end up killing plants because, like, the environment might not be right or X, Y, Z. So it is, like, even when you're so experienced, there's still a risk that that plant's going to die. That's cost you thousands of dollars.
Absolutely. These are things that should be grown in botanical gardens. The home is the worst place to grow houseplants. Think about it. It's not outside. It's not a tropical environment. Like, you can put them outside for the summer. Like, I have a couple houseplants I'll put outside for the summer that need a little bit more attention. Or I'll put things inside glass enclosures or, like, cloches to cover them up to give them more of that greenhouse effect. But, no, all these plants that people are dropping, like, a bunch, thousands of dollars on, these are things that should be grown in, like, botanical collections.
Oh my gosh. Questions, here we go. What would you say are the main issues you see when people try to keep plants alive? So it's like, what are your sort of go-to, like, don'ts? Like, don't do this, don't do that, before we get into the do's.
Yeah, I mean, the two most important things I would say are light and water. I would say always more light than you would expect, because, like I said, the home is the worst environment. Like, our windows are really the only space that you should be growing houseplants. What you see behind me with all these plants are literally illuminated by grow lights, which is how they grow. If I didn't have a grow light there, the plants would just wither away. So more light than you would expect, and then less water than you would expect, too, in the same time. So, like, more light and then less water than you would think. Of course, that's, you know, subjective, because, like, ferns do not want a lot of light and they want a lot of water. So there's, like, of course things. But I would say my rule of thumb, when I get a plant, if I'm worried about it, I just make sure I'm giving it enough light from a window and I'm not overwatering it.
Okay, that's so interesting, because I think recently I had a pretty good track record with houseplants, and then recently bought a bunch. Pandemic energy, the wavelength of the pandemic. I did, but I guess what everyone else did, and I think I killed three from overwatering, which I'd never done before, because I was just watering every Sunday, and I think what happened is it was right when winter came. So is that that's a serious thing we have to think about, is when winter comes, you hold back watering? I think that's what happened.
Yes. There are a couple plants, if we're getting to like the nitty gritty, that are winter active and some that are more summer active. That's more with like in succulents that are more winter active. It's like they're absorbing all of that summer energy and hot sun. But exactly that, 9 times out of 10, you want to water less in the winter time, because it's just going to get cold and wet roots and wet feet, and nobody wants that.
So how much less on average? Like, what do you do when winter comes? Like, do you really scale back?
It's like different, because I have south-facing windows in my home, so the sun is so low in the sky that my plants dry out so much quicker in the winter time, as well as the fact that the heat kicks on and the humidity kind of drops because of that. So it is, once again, something very subjective. But if you just live, I mean, like, I've all my other apartments that I've ever lived in with houseplants was not like this. And I would say on average, if I was watering a plant once a week in the summertime, I'd be watering it probably every 2 weeks. But once again, okay, it is all subjective.
How, oh my gosh,
on earth do you keep track of watering your almost five, not 500.
Not quite 500.
But somewhere under 500 plants.
Yeah. So at this point, I feel like we have like this like symbiotic language where they like speak to me and they tell me when it's time. But when I was in my first couple of years, I kept a spreadsheet. And I kept the spreadsheet that would say the scientific name of the plant, the common name of the plant, when I got it, just because I liked to know that, because, you know, these things add up fast sometimes.
Keep track, yeah.
And then, of course, when I last watered and when I last fertilized.
Oh, wow. My God. Organization station over here.
I do not. I mean, you're helping me with an experiment that people will be able to see pretty soon. So I was like managing 10 plants and barely having to manage them because they were in complete darkness. That was the whole point. But I still was just like, wait, I can't keep track. This is too many. I cannot imagine having that many plants. I would love to have that many plants if they could magically take care of themselves.
Yeah, well, you just have to get them to speak to you, Mitch, and
It's not as much work as you think. Like, I swear. I mean, I probably have like one day a week where I spend like an hour maximum, like going around just like watering everything. But like I said, a lot of these plants like can visually like look droopy, or a lot of them I call it my taco test, which I should trademark. But it's where you would take a leaf and you would like try to fold it up. Like I'll grab this little like Hoya right here, and you would try to fold the leaf up. I know it's so dark you can barely see, but if I was trying to fold the leaf up like a hard taco shell. If this plant was to need water, Hoyas, peperomias are ones that I use a lot of these for, and those are plants that are very prevalent in my home. I know once it would fold up without breaking that it's like time to water it, because it would lack the succulents from being dry. So that's like my surefire way to know I'm not going to overwater them without having to stick my finger in the soil or like really do anything other than just
Oh my God, so folding it and it doesn't like break.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't like, you know, I can tell with that Hoya.
Yeah,
I couldn't
no, but that's
it at
kind
all.
Of like not what I immediately thought you were going to say, because actually the fact that it would like more quote unquote break is showing that it's like full of water and is more like robust and like turgid.
And plants like Hoyas and peperomias like want to be dry. So if you overwater
the
them.
Like, what's like, the pepperoni?
The pepperoni?
Imagine we were like, those aren't plants, that's pepperonis.
Yes, I love that. I would hear that
imagine
a lot at the house.
We all just
store.
Found out that like pepperoni grew on plants. We were like, oh, it's vegetarian?
Yeah, well, peperomias are in the peppercorn family. So they're very,
Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, your face is so mad when I said pepperoni. I freaking heard
I'm
this
sorry.
From every
it's like things that you hear all the time back when I was in the industry, so...
That's so funny. Like all those so smart. There's all those like TikToks of people who have to like work at any retail store or grocery stores and hear the same jokes like constantly over and over.
Okay. I have a question that's based on my study for today.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have been I sort of am minus you helping Mitch with these plants, been I'm sort of the plant guy in the home.
Yeah. That's the premise of the video. Yeah. I've never taken care of a plant in my life. I need like the lowest maintenance plant, please.
And in a pandemic with lots of free time and some might argue lots of depression, I've been petting my plants. I water them and then I stroke them. Maybe there's some weed involved, some SZA music is playing, and I like try to like I think I'm helping them by touching them to take the dust off, because I had read somewhere at some point, I think once, and this is what I'm challenging today, this concept that the dust grows on these houseplants, and so you need to take the dust off so that photosynthesis can happen more effectively. So I like to now do it leaf by leaf. So then I was reading this week about a study about touch signaling within plants. This was the tail cress, which isn't a houseplant, but... it was really cool. So it was about how like plants actually respond to mechanical stimulation, which is touch. It has a cool name, thigmomorphogenesis, which is like...
that's like what they do when someone touches them?
Name of the process of chemical cell signaling that happens when they're touched. And it can induce a stress response, which will actually slow down growth. And so this study, what they did is they touched this specific tail crest, also known as Arabidopsis thaliana. That's its pepperoni name. They touched it with a paintbrush, a specific leaves, and they test it 30 minutes after, 1 hour after, 3 hours after, and 6 hours after. And they did find that this like chemical stress response was highest at 30 minutes after, it would slow down growth. It would have a mitochondrial functional cell signaling that would essentially make it seem like the plant was like getting ready for a perceived pathogen attack. Oh. And then I was like, wait, should I not be touching these plants? And like, here I am thinking I'm having a moment with them, but they're actually screaming like, you're literally trying to attack us. We hate you. So I know that like this is a wild plant, so it's not going to have to deal with that issue of dust most likely because there's wind and all these other factors in the wild. So what is your like thought process around cleaning, touching these plants versus not?
Yeah, well, that's fun that you say that. There are houseplants that do respond to touch, and it's like negative, like it's their way of like protecting themselves. Really? So the most popular one would be like the sensitive plant, which is the mimosa tree, if you guys have heard of that.
I want one so bad. I've been going all over. Yeah, yes. And you can't get them.
Well, don't bother.
It's like an exotic plant.
It's a waste
right?
of money.
Why? There's like, I've always wanted this plant, and I've been calling different places and like Instagram DMing, and they're all like, we don't get them. Like, you have to come quick when they come in.
They're $2,000. That's why.
No.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
They're not. They would cost like 15.
So wait, why are they overrated? They respond to touch.
Well, I mean, they are tree saplings or seedlings. I don't know what the correct word is, but they are just not suitable houseplants. They are just for fun. Like in my experience, it dies easily, and because it's not really a houseplant, they're like extremely susceptible to pests. So it's like a magnet, and they just like come out of nowhere from like through the vents and like the cracks in the windows. So that's just my experience with plants like that. But not only that, it's like you touch it and it reacts, and that's the whole thing that you want to do, but you're like, you're not supposed to do that. I had a manager when I worked at the plant store, and he would like yell at people and be like, stop touching the sensitive plant.
Oh my god, you're like, yeah, it's panicking. Like, it's literally the pathogen response. That's so funny. It's like, you're abusing the plant.
Yeah, but to the cleaning aspect, it is something that I've noticed. There are some plants, specifically the ones that seem to have like larger leaves and the thicker leaves. Like I have a Ficus elastica, which is a rubber tree, and like if I like, I have it literally in like my walkway, and I'll like walk by it, and like the leaves get like damaged, and that's something I don't like. And I think that happens with like my Ficus lyrata that I used to grow as well. So it's just kind of something that they don't respond well to it. But Ficus are very like finicky plants, but they're also very popular.
But are you conscious of the dust? Like, is that a myth that I've created? No, that is a thing.
Yeah, I dust my plants probably not as much as I should because of the sheer quantity, but I do just take like a dry paper towel, and then I'll just like give them a quick wipe, and then I'll get a damp one afterwards just so I'm not like caking the dust on there. But that's just because it's a me problem, because I don't dust them very often, so it's usually like a whole layer of dust.
With
houseplants, 9 times out of 10 I would say it's not really an issue. I'd say it's just like specific ones, like I was saying, like the sensitive plant's not gonna like it, and the ficus that I grow don't seem to really like it, and they just get like ugly looking.
Wow, that's so interesting. Because I've started to think about it as I touch them.
I'm like, it's probably a trade-off too. You're like, fine. Even if I doubt you're hurting them that much, and even if you are causing a stress response, you're also helping them in a way that they are indoor plants. They're gonna get dust. They can't.
So, what else this study found was that the stress response would decrease the more they did it. So the plant actually like adapted to it. And that's another question I have is that our fig. You told me once that you're supposed to shake the stem because it's
like... Well, I didn't like tell you. I just was like, I saw someone say that on
Yeah, sorry, like shaking the stem. But to me, it made like sense from a scientific perspective because this plant would be out in the wild where there would be wind. And then that shaking, apparently, the thought behind it is that it thickens the stem. And it is like more realistic interpretation of the outdoors. Is that true?
Well, I mean, from a scientific point, I don't really know, but I would say that sounds kind of overkill to shake the trunk.
I was doing it for weeks.
Well, what I would do is, in my bedroom, we have two cats. My roommate's cat likes to chew on some of my plants, so I keep a lot of plants in my bedroom with the door closed, and I keep a fan on in there, and so the plant leaves are always moving, and I feel like that kind of, like, simulates what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, because I doubt, like, the fig leaf is ever, like, being aggressively shaken.
And figs are so finicky. I feel like you would just, like, knock the leaves off. They would just pop. Like, I said, if you just, like, touch them, like, literally, we just had a couple leaves pop off recently because we just are always walking by it, and it's just,
oh my gosh, I'm panicked about this study about touch. Made me freak out this weekend. I've been really rubbing down our fig because I'm like, this is, you know, this is an accent piece in our home, and now I'm like, some of the plants are falling off, and I'm like, is it because I'm petting it too much? Like, oh my gosh, it's so stressful. Also very calming.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay, you have two cats. Do you have to worry about them eating the plants at all?
So my cat, the plants came first, the cat came second, and she's actually right here. Oh my goodness, hello sweetie.
Like, oh hi. Oh.
She's a little teeny black cat. Her name is Muffin.
As you
but
say,
I use
the plants came first, the
she's
cat
like,
came
excuse
second.
Me?
She's listening. She's so good. She does not mess with the plants at all. She like just doesn't even seem to notice them. My roommate's cat does seem to notice them though. The plants that I keep around aren't, like, fatal. I have, like, two euphorbias, which are, like, the most poisonous plants I have in my home. They're shoved in, like, the back corner of my windows. Like, they can't get to them. He will, like, chew on, I'm, like, looking around to see. He'll chew on, like, I have, like, a monstera that he'll, like, chew on occasionally. But because they're just, like, small nibbles, it's not really gonna, like, I don't have to take them to the vet. I don't have to worry about it. Like, they have calcium oxalates in the leaves, which are, like, these, I'm sure you guys know more than me. But, like, they're, like, little glass shards that are basically
I didn't know there was glass shards in any of the plants.
Yeah, so they're like microscopic glass shards in like the sap. Wow. So that's like what's not good about the like cats or animals getting it in their mouth. And they usually learn pretty quickly, like, that's not something I should eat. Some of them are pretty relentless though. So like if the cat ate like a whole like branch of philodendron, it would probably throw up. It would probably throw up a couple times.
Yeah.
It probably isn't going to die because it's not like a fatal instance. It's just its stomach is going to be irritated as well as its mouth. Right. So it just might seem, but I'm not saying please take care of your cats, people.
Like, yeah.
Don't freak out
on this podcast.
Like, don't freak out. Like, the cat's gonna be okay. If you're terrified, take it to the vet. But I keep on the floor like pet safe plants. Like, I have Calatheas on the floor, and Denver is like a magnet to them. His name's Denver, so he's like a magnet, and he'll just like chew the whole circumference of the leaves, and it looks like crap, but one day he'll be gone and the plant will have its time to shine.
Oh my god.
Well, she's moving out this year, not that he's going to die.
One day this cat's gonna croak and die, and then the plant
then
will
I'll
be fine.
I'll finally be able to
it'll
like,
come back and thrive
plants.
After the death of this mammal.
Yeah, no. No, absolutely not.
Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah, no, I'm still in awe of like how many plants you I guess like actually we have a good amount now, especially since the pandemic. And you do a really good job of
it. Oh my god, but it's next to 450. It's like
oh yeah, next to 450.
No, tiny honestly, I think more than one is a lot to take care of. So
okay. Yeah. Why thank you.
Well, what like where would you start with somebody? If somebody was like, I'm a new plant, I want to get into houseplants, where do I start?
Well, that's a good question because I would want to know, first of all, like their home environment as well as their like temperament. Like, I would always recommend a ZZ plant because I always say if you water it more than you pay your rent, it's too much. But some people want to water a houseplant more than they pay their rent. So that might not be a good example. Although it's indestructible, it just might not be what some people are looking for.
Because you could overwater that plant.
Anyway. Well, you could, yeah. If you wanted to water something every day, like, I would dare to say maybe you should grow a fern because, you know, it's something I don't want to grow because it would just fall in the mess of my plants and I'd find a dried up piece of trash one day. But, so, you know, everyone's different, but it really just definitely depends on what the lighting conditions are in their home as well as their temperament, like I said.
Like who they are.
Oh, wait, yeah. I have a question about potting. Mr. Potting. Hello, Mr. Potting. Okay, so I have this idea that you have your plant that you buy. It's in its little plastic container. And I'm always like, okay, so I'm going to buy something at least sort of double the size. mm-hmm. as a pot that I'm going to put it in. And my concept is that the roots are going to expand. This is going to allow it to grow and thrive. And I never really think anything about whether it being smaller or bigger. And I found that a couple plants that have died that I think from overwatering, it was almost like the roots never got into the potting soil. It was like they just kind of like, it felt like when they eventually died and it pulled out the root system, I'm like, why didn't these roots go anywhere? Like, they didn't go into the soil. Is there any tips you have about potting to either make sure those roots actually get into that extra soil that you've put in, or like ways to think about it? Because that's just the way I thought about it. And it didn't seem to work recently for me for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, all plants are different. If you're working with a plant that has a little bit more of like a meaty root system, like the ZZ plant or like a pothos, these are things that you could probably go maybe like 2 inches in diameter larger with the pot that you're planting it in. And then you always want to like loosen up the roots that are coming around this, like the perimeter of the inside the nursery pot, and that's just going to help them kind of explore.
How do you do that?
Oh, just like, you can like mess with them. It? Oh, you can totally mess with them. They're not going to just like, if you knock off a couple roots, it's fine. It's fine.
So you like take it out of the plastic container and literally like,
I usually we'll open up the whole thing. I'll usually kind of tear it open from the bottom a little bit if it's like a very tight root system. But also, speaking of which, if it's like more fine root system, like if they have like more lacy roots, like, I don't know, ferns, peperomias, pepperonis, pileas.
You can just tell the root system is just more fine.
Well, if you took it out of the pot, like the ZZ plant has like these chunky roots, like you would see very clearly. But if you were to take a peperomia out of the pot, you wouldn't really see any roots like that. Like it would all just be like kind of like little lacy bits going all throughout the soil. So those kinds of plants want to stay smaller. And you might not even need to necessarily repot them. And they might do better if you just kind of leave them be because they're more used to those settings. But
In the plastic container.
Yeah, you can leave them like the pepperonis.
I've literally always assumed you have to put it in something bigger or it's gonna suffer.
No, I'd say the most important thing is to let your plants acclimate to your home. So when you bring them into your home, let them sit for like 2 weeks in the setting that you want to have, because mind you, they're coming from like the nursery, so you don't want to just like put it on like a dark kitchen counter for 2 weeks to acclimate. Like you want it to be like in a good spot. And then once it's acclimated, like it's probably going to drop a leaf or two, or maybe once you start to see like some new growth coming in, then I would recommend going ahead and repotting it just to.
Oh my gosh. I have never done that.
I feel like I've seen people like often would just put like the plastic container inside of a nicer, you know,
you can absolutely
whatever like that.
Yeah, that's called a cash pot or a cash pot. It's just a planter without a drainage hole. You never want a plant in a planter without a drainage hole. If you ever see to put stones in, it's a myth.
Oh my god, and now I just want to throw myself off this.
So here's the issue with that. The water is just going to sit down in the stones and it's just going to get gross and it's got nowhere to go. I always recommend drilling. I've never broken a pot. I've drilled into hundreds of pots. I've never broken one.
Really? Okay, just like a single hole out the bottom?
And then you use, I just, one in the bottom, I literally just do, it's a glass and tile bit, but I think people probably play it safer with like the diamond saw tip, but I just, like I said, I've never broken one.
But then you have to put it on a tray.
Yeah, but you could just get like a nice plate from the thrift store. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. No, this is very interesting to me because
I just didn't know that either.
Dispelled this myth on this podcast, and I've been dragged because I was always getting my rocks, putting them at the bottom of my pots, not having holes in the bottom. That's not something I've ever relied on. Just repotting the second I brought those plants home. I'm rethinking everything right now. So don't necessarily repot immediately.
I feel like that's like a myth that like BuzzFeed would make or something.
Oh my god, I don't want to be BuzzFeed. I'm BuzzFeed. I'm a millennial piece of shit.
Oh my god, stop it. If you need to plant into something that you like don't want to drill into it and you absolutely have to plant into it, I'd say do like a quarter inch of horticultural charcoal in the bottom of the planter. And that's it. And then just like use your normal potting mix and then be very mindful of the amount that you like plant you water, like, because that's going in there, it's not going to drain.
It's just sitting there. So what does the charcoal do?
Oh, it's just going to keep it clean on the bottom, like instead of the rocks where it would just kind of sit and get gross. Okay. But the charcoal, it's going to the soils also, because it's so fine, it will kind of like mesh with the charcoal down there. So it won't be just like an inch of rocks. It'll just be like a little bit of charcoal, and then that'll keep any water that's at the bottom clean. And then the water can still be reabsorbed back up into the plant. And then just be careful.
None of these plants in this room have they all have rocks in the bottom of their pots without holes.
But well, I've had some for years that are fine.
They are the way they are. I think I've obviously found an equilibrium with them. So if it's working, it's like, keep it. But
I'm just not watering them too much.
Exactly.
That's my issue.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Oh my God, I know. But now I'm just like, oh my Lord above heaven.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay. I'm going to touch on the research that I did. Mine's not a specific study, but first, I wanted to get your thoughts on some of this stuff. So, A, I did not realize that the houseplant industry in America is like almost $2 billion a year, which is insane, and it's definitely like exploded since the pandemic. And then I was finding all these companies. Like, have you heard of The Sill before?
I have, yeah.
So I guess there's like that's in America. There's another one in the UK.
What's that?
So The Sill is basically a company, it's like an online e-commerce company where you can like order your plants from. So instead of like going to a store, it's like meant to help people who maybe are like totally unfamiliar. It's very like millennial, like easy, you know, like that kind of like aesthetic of like you go and you can pick your plant and they have all these like
pinks
cute little pots
and blues and, yeah, totally. And ceramics.
This one company had started, started in 2018. They raised $5 million to start, and then they sold 100,000 years of that plant, like, sorry, 100,000 plants that year. So I'm just like curious what your thoughts are about like these companies that have started this business. And is that interesting? Obviously, maybe it makes it accessible to people who don't have super easy access to places, but in another way, maybe it's like kind of just falling off of trends. And I don't know. I'm curious what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah. Like a company like that, I feel like is just kind of like a stepping stone. Like whether you're buying a gift for somebody, it's got everything covered. Or if you are just getting the houseplants and you just kind of want like a dynamic duo to start out with or something. You know what I mean? They're all like tried and true that they sell. So it's, you know, it's a great like stepping stone, like I said. Yeah. So that's kind of just that. There are a lot of e-commerce things going on with houseplants lately. I think that's, sorry, I hear, I can't tell if there's a sound going on. I can't tell if the cat's like chewing on something. Oh, he is. He's chewing on the calafia.
We just watched
him. He's right there.
He's only
at
400.
He's got his feet. He's licking his lips. He's like, I've been chewing on that plant. But I'm going to go
in action, National Geographic.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. That just totally threw me off. The e-commerce. Okay, so that's been something that's been like kind of abused lately. Like Etsy and things like that. I've been noticing like people will go to their local like Home Depot and like purchase, I don't know, like a pepperoni. They'll purchase a big 8-inch pot of a pepperoni. That kind of sounds dirty, but that, I mean, and then they'll separate it into like 4-inch pots that you would normally see, and then they would resell them on their Etsy,
wow.
And they paid like $15 for that 8-inch pot, and then they're just kind of straight up repotting them, which, you know, some people could say it's a way of making money, but it's a little bit different than when you buy in, as like when I was a buyer, like I would be buying an established plants that were like bought in, like I just feel like it's like malintent, like it's just, you know.
Right.
It's just not something that's my... I don't support it. I openly don't support it on my YouTube channel, but people can do whatever they want, though.
I was curious, even with these companies, I'm curious, and even with your experience, like, just working at a plant store, like, what does the industry behind the curtain look like? Like, are there factories of people just growing these plants? Like, are they coming from specific places? Do you have to reach out to, you know, exotic, like, locations for exotic plants, or, you know, like, we sort of slowly learn about, like, how agriculture works and how there really are just, like, these fields or factories full of animals and flowers for Valentine's Day. It's like, do you have any insight into that, or is it kind of, like, closed-doored?
Yeah, I would say there are, like, factories. I think that's something that's probably a little bit more overseas. I know in, like, the Netherlands, there's, like, a lot more, like, tissue culture going on, which is, like, the scientific method of propagating or recreating houseplants, or plants in general, but they use it a lot for houseplants. In America, it's definitely more of just, like, a nursery thing. Like, people are getting in their plugs that they're purchasing from these factories that are creating these tissue culture plants. They're potting them in their 4, 6, 8-inch pots, and they are just letting them grow out from there in their nurseries. It can be in Florida. There's places I used to buy from in Canada even. So, you know what I mean? It's shocking that there's be like, you know, a lot of plants grown up there, but they do. A lot of plants come from Canada. So a lot of cool ones.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Awesome.
So they're growing them in greenhouses. Though.
They're growing them in greenhouses. Yes. And outside, outside too, like under shade cloths in like Florida.
Oh, I see. Like they are outside, but they have like a controlled environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Remember you had looked into that research about like how solar panels and plants can work together. Like the solar panels can provide like certain types of shade.
Yeah, yeah. There's like there's certain crops that they think will grow even better right directly underneath solar panels and then also help with the energy efficiency of the solar panels.
That is so interesting.
Maybe not house plants. I don't know. It's probably like
it was not house like plants. It was actually like tomato plants. It was like like they were trying to figure out how to, you know, farm both the sun's energy and farm for like vegetation and food.
That actually makes me really curious. As somebody who owns so many houseplants, are you interested in like gardening? Like, would you ever own like a tomato plant for its, you know what I mean? Like the way it looks, or does that feel like it's too much work or maybe not the right environment?
Well, I did that when I was younger. That's how I got into plants. But I think why I'm so into houseplants now is because it's just not really, like, feasible for me in the city. Like, I have a very small outdoor space. We have a courtyard, like, shared with my two neighbors. But it's just so heavily shaded. And it's all the buildings right. and stuff. Like, it's just not something... Like, I could probably grow, like, heavy, heavy shade stuff. But, like, I just right. throw my houseplants out there. So, one day... But honestly, I think I'm a city boy, so I think I'm going to be here for a pretty long time. So I don't think I'm going to have that kind of space, but I'm not down with it. Like
you're not, you're not against, you're not anti.
Yes, no.
Anti-vegetation.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
The last thing I wanted to talk about, I have a few more like final questions, but I wanted to bring up like, the question for all of us just to answer is like the environmental impact of like people being so much more curious. Like obviously there is this idea of it is so nice. Like as we bring plants into even our own home, I've felt like more connected to nature and you become more present and aware of those things. I think at least that's like anecdotally how I feel, but I was just trying to like look into it, trying to figure out what, especially these companies, like the criticisms were that, you know, you're adding a lot of like plant miles, like having to travel from different places. You know, every time someone orders a plant, like putting it on a truck or putting it wherever and traveling it across the world, apparently like plastic pots are not often recyclable, though now we know we can probably just like use those and not have to destroy them. But you know what I mean? You get those plastic pots, they're either black or they're contaminated and not recyclable. And the last thing was peat. I don't know much about peat. You know, like, I guess it's like a material that you use to help plants grow. Is that
yes.
what that is?
Yes. Peat.
But it was like that can take thousands of years to form. It's just like decomposed plant matter, but the industry can like extract 500 years worth of growth in a year. So obviously as this industry for houseplants booms, and I don't know if peat is used in like regular vegetation or if it just is like in the houseplant industry. It was interesting. I feel like plants can bring so much awareness to people. Not so much awareness, but at least sort of like a cognitive connection to nature, especially if you're not in a city where you have access. But obviously, I was like just trying to think like, how can it be a sustainable industry? Or one day will we be like, oh my God, the plant industry is also destroying the earth, which would feel very ironic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, things that I try to do, like when I was a buyer, I went out of my way to buy local. I had three people that I bought from that were within like 50 miles. So that was really important to me. Of course, every now and again, I would truck in something from Florida and truck in something from Canada, just kind of like, you know, keep things fresh because business. But
right, people want like, yeah.
Yeah. But I was very mindful trying to keep everything as local as possible. All of our soil was local. So that was things that, you know, as a small business, I really wanted to like kind of play into. I like that you said the peat thing. That is something that is kind of not really known about a lot. And honestly, I don't think I know even as much as I should know about that. But it is a mined resource. That it's mined from bogs, and it is something in all-purpose soil. And a lot of people are trying to switch over to either growing plants hydroponically or semi-hydroponics, they call it, which is like with LECA pebbles, which is like a puffed aggregate, like kind of like clay sort of thing. It looks like cocoa puffs. So you can grow plants in that. And then coconut coir is much more resourceful than peat, which is another thing that you can literally just replace your peat with. And I'm guilty. I don't really go out of my way to do it, and it's something I should do because I'm just so used to just buying a big bag of potting soil
the way that it is.
Yeah. And
so
hydroponics,
is that when you grow like just in water or without soil?
Just in water. So it is soilless in water. So technically, if you're just like putting like a pothos cutting in a jar of water, that's hydroponics in a sense. So,
okay.
Yeah, right? But I think it's really easy to grow plants hydroponically because they don't have all that heavy soil to just kind of wither away in if you rot them. So I think we might have talked about this, but if you have a really dark corner, you can just plop like a cutting in water and it'll do 10 10 times better than if you were to throw it in a pot in a dark corner.
Because the soil does what?
I literally have no idea. This is just something I have learned from experience.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
That's really interesting. It's kind of not what you would think.
Uh-huh. Well, they don't seem to rot. Like, if you're changing the water out every like month or two, people probably say once a week that you should, but I do like every couple months. And it just seems to take care of itself versus, you know, in soil, it can dry out or be too wet for too long. And the roots just kind of seem to acclimate. But are you going to have a luscious plant? No, but I've had like a little pothos cutting up on one of my dark shelves that has looked exactly the same for 3 years, and
it's
very
much
alive.
And it stays in like the... Would you ever transfer a hydroponic plant into soil one day?
You could. You would probably want to do that within like 6 months, or maybe like a year, just because those roots are different. They're, because, you know, they're...
The way they grow.
Yes, they're not soil roots, so they would have to readjust. So if your plant's like overgrown in water, it's something that I, you know...
Probably not the best thing to do.
That's so interesting. I mean, I get what you're saying about the environmental impacts, because it just feels like, you know,
well,
like...
This is a big question for me. I was like, I've never thought about what goes in, even just that question about the industry, like being like, I'm so blind to like where our plants
come from.
Or even
the sale. Like, it's interesting. We live in Toronto where there are so many local plant stores, so we just go to our local plant store to buy them. But it's like, I never really thought about how there could even be a website like the sale and such an industry around this. But obviously, if it's taking off and 1.8 billion dollar industry, like, that's pretty incredible. I just have this thing though where I'm like, so many things have such an economic and like cost to our planet. It just is like, it's so, it feels measure. Like so like want to go in hard on them.
Like, no, I know. Like, of all the industries, it feels like the one to be like, it's probably, we shouldn't focus on this one
but
first.
But it's always important to think about those things.
Yeah, I think about like conservationism. Like, a lot of these plants are things that could be extinct in the wild, and hopefully that's not because people were poaching them, but, you know, things like that, I think, is kind of fun to just like enjoy growing them. There's, you know, it's definitely always a bad thing that you can think about for
the cost
of things for
truly
one thing,
everything.
But, yeah.
But. Anything. I like, do you have any more plant advice questions?
No, go with, I can see
I
your
just wanted to
good.
Know, like, okay, a couple like last minute blast questions. Like, what are your most hated plants?
Oh my gosh. I did a whole video about plants I don't like. I think my least.
You think he was gonna be
I can't possibly. You're like, well, I've actually gone in hard and down how many ones I hate.
Yeah, I definitely have plants I don't like. I just think a lot of plants are overrated, and that people are just kind of like sheep when it comes to a lot of these plants. I hate to say it, but there's one in particular. It's called the philodendron birkin. I feel like I drag the hell out of this thing on my channel all the time, but it's a plant that was literally manufactured to be like popular and expensive. I mean, they called it birkin, like a birkin bag.
Is it literally birkin, like a birkin bag?
Yeah.
Oh my god, barf me up to Carolina.
Right? And it's so stupid because it looks like this houseplant that, it looks like a philodendron Congo, which is like a $5 plant. And then it looks also like a canna lily, which is also like a $5 plant mixed into one. And it's just like, they tried, but they failed. But they're just like, oh, let's just slap birkin on it and just see if people like respond to it.
Oh my god, the next thing you know, the Cadillac, the Tesla.
Oh my god, the Tesla plant.
Oh my god, wow.
So that's like my most hated houseplant. There are some others too that I think are a little overrated, like alocasia and stuff, elephant ears, which are just like not suitable for indoor growth. It's like a patio plant, but people are like freaking out over these little ones that are like 4 inches tall and cost them like $150. Like, I don't get it. Like, I'm an enthusiast. I think a lot of people get into, like, you know, it's because it's trendy. A lot of people get into this like knee deep with like, I need rare plants. I need like the rare, the most expensive thing. And I feel like those are the people who are going to fall out of this within like a year or two.
Yeah, they just get excited by that. And you had kind of pointed out in one of your videos I watch how often like plants start out as really expensive, but then when they become the trend, suddenly it's like they're not worthless, but it's like they start out expensive.
Yes, the philodendron birkin, once upon a time, it cost like $150, but I would be selling them for like $12, $15 when I left the houseplant store back in October. So it's like within a year, it just took a plummet. Also, another great example of that is the Pilea peperomioides, if you guys are familiar with that. They call it the friendship or the pancake plant as well.
And I think we have one of those, yeah.
They're super cute. But they used to cost a lot of money once again. Not like as exponential as a lot of the things now, because plants just did not cost a lot of money like 3 or 4 years ago. But still, like, a little 2-inch pot would go for like $50, which nowadays that's something that would sell for like $250.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that plant.
Yeah, it's cute.
They're super cute, but they just weren't available in our continent. Like, they were grown in Europe and they were mass produced over there, but it just wasn't something that was in the American market. And so once it hit, it was like a slow trickle.
So. I love that one. That literally is my Birkin right now.
And they are so cheap. Our corner store has them, and they are like literally a few bucks for like a little
one. I can't believe they called a plant a Birkin and sold it for a bunch of money, and now it's worthless.
I know. Isn't that so funny? Literally,
it's
it had
so
it coming.
Literally, like, it's capitalism in a nutshell.
Yeah, yes. Literally.
Let's find a way to make this so expensive, and then in 5 years, everyone will be like, that's literally worthless.
I hope that happens to Birkin bags. I hope that everyone just like gets embarrassed and we're like, wow, look at that trash and expensive bag.
Okay, my last question, and I think you just had a video on this, so you can lean off of that, but like, what do you see as the biggest trends for 2021, or the plants that are kind of like up and coming hot?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I felt like my video that I talked about that recently was about plants that would be like on the market, but I don't think they're ones that necessarily will be popular.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, that is such a good question. I have not thought about that, and I'm like scanning around the room trying to find a possible answer to this. I don't
like,
know.
Is it like in the plant industry, do you feel like it's like, I feel like, you know, when you're in the fashion industry, all these, like, it's like the certain communities get it first and are like so excited, and then eventually it's just like everywhere.
And in some design circles, like colors, like what colors come in and out of fashion are like chosen. Like they actually decide, like this, like millennial pink.
And then you see that scale down throughout the years.
Yeah. So there's not a larger resource deciding like which is the Birkin of the year.
No. And I almost wonder sometimes, like, I don't think so, but I wonder if it's like plant influencers like me who almost like set the trend sometimes, which I hope not, because that's not what I want. But I just want people to like what they like. But sometimes I just hope that, you know, I wonder if they're like looking at these plants and being like, I want that, because I just want to share information, but I don't want people to see 10 plants then suddenly want to buy 10 plants because they saw them on the video.
That's interesting. That's so interesting. We find out that you're actually the person deciding the trends and you don't even realize.
Well, it could work to your favor. I know that I'm not trying to throw shade and I'm not going to say any names, but there are a lot of like other houseplant influencers who have their own like online stores. So they're probably just like, I have this plant and you can buy this on my shop for $55.
And you can name names on this podcast.
No, I'm not going
to. He wants to. What's his community? Tell us
about a drama in the plant community.
Oh my gosh. I am like the black sheep. I mean, like, I think that's very endearing to call me the black sheep, actually, but myself. But I just don't talk to anybody. I like don't speak to anybody. I think I told you, Mitch, I'm like so nervous of being so lame. Like, I think houseplants are so lame, and I get worried that like a lot of the people who like are into them are lame. I don't know. Like, I mean, all my friends are cool. But I get so scared. Yeah, no. I get so scared sometimes.
Fair. Like, I think it's a fair like assessment. Like, we talk about influencers, we talk about YouTubers, and like as a breed, you find cool ones every now and then, but there's lots of people out there that can be super cringy. And so I would imagine in your own community, you'd be like, are these people just trying to capitalize on this? Are they genuinely into plants? But I'm sure there are like the ones out there that are actually cool.
Yeah.
You'll meet them one day.
I'll find them.
Like, or maybe not.
A couple.
Maybe they are literally lame.
I mean, I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I can count on one hand the influencers I've met that I'm like, you're actually a normal person. And you're one of them.
Well, thank you. Yes. I promise I'm chill. I'm going to hang out and smoke some weed and have a couple margaritas tonight.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I have to tell our audience what happened. Like, we had filmed our video last time. And then at the end, can I drag you with this? Yeah. Like, it's okay. But at the end, Nick messaged me. He was like, I accidentally bumped the camera. And so for like the last part of the video, you can just see my roommate's bong sitting in the background. I was like,
I think I moved
our channel is very, you know, 420 friendly. Our podcast, Greg is very 420 friendly.
Oh, wow. Throw me under the 420.
Act like you are. I'm not saying I'm not. I'm just like, you are.
Yeah. Recently, we were reading a book about changing habits. And it was like, the first thing you need to do is change your cultural identity. And I'm like, well, I actually really like being a stoner, so I guess I'm not giving it. I was just like, culturally, it's like I like it, so maybe that's my main issue. If I ever
I don't think you have
stop.
To change anything.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm like, guess that habit's not going. We'll move on to something else.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Where can people find you?
You can find me on YouTube/whatever link you include with this podcast. I will give it to you. It's Nick Pileggi Plants. And I'm at Philly Foliage on Instagram.
Wait, I bet, what is it? Philly Foliage?
Philly Foliage.
Like, wait, spell that out.
In Philadelphia. Okay. So it's like, it's okay. like if I was going to have a brand one day, that's my brand. Philly
yeah,
Foliage.
Okay, Philly Foliage. All right. Is the foliage a PH?
No. Oh, my God. Greg, you're not supposed to ask me that.
Oh, and no. No, I wouldn't have liked it. Like I wouldn't have liked it.
It's an F. The PH scale.
Yeah, no.
Lowercase no. P, uppercase. It's the way it should be. It's F.
It's the way it should be. That's what I'm saying. If you had said it was PH, I would have been like, embarrassing mistake.
That would just mean that I didn't get there soon enough and I lost the URL.
Well, we really appreciate all of your advice. Thanks for being on the pod. Thanks for making the video with me. I'm excited for it to come out.
I'm about to drill holes in the bottom of all my pods.
Yeah, seriously. This weekend, Greg's definitely just going to be like,
I'm freaking out.
It's like, have you ever used a drill? We don't know how to use a drill in this house. Yeah, thanks a lot. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, everyone else, for listening. Hashtag Silent Podcast. If you want to talk about plants with us, if you want to tweet or Instagram Nick and ask your questions, I'm going to put them out there that he can answer them for you, because we certainly can't. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Peace.
Bye.
Yeah.
That was so much fun. Oh, my God. Thanks. Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.